Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thus, when he was in the land of Bharatavarsha, travelling to all the places of pilgrimage, he visited Prabhasa Kshetra. At that time, Maharaja Yudhishthira was the emperor and held the world under one military strength and one flag. Purport. More than 5,000 years ago, while Saint Vidura was travelling the earth as a pilgrim, India was known as Bharatavarsha, as it is known even today. The history of the world cannot give any systematic account for more than 3,000 years into the past. But before that, the whole world was under the flag and military strength of Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was the emperor of the world. At present, there are hundreds and thousands of flags flapping in the United Nations. But during the time of Vidura, there was, by the grace of Ajita, Lord Krishna, only one flag. The nations of the world are very eager to again have one state under one flag. But for this, they must seek the favor of Lord Krishna, who alone can help us become one worldwide nation. Om Gyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a powerful purport by Srila Prabhupada, and interesting how he chooses that topic and emphasizes that. This chapter is all about Vidura, what's happening with Vidura, how he left the house of the Kauravas, or was kicked out from the house of the Kauravas by Duryodhan, and he's on pilgrimage. And it's mentioning here that he's on pilgrimage, but everywhere is under the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira. And Srila Prabhupada focuses on that, on the purport, how it's just one nation, pretty much. There was only one flag. It's one flag, one nation state, or one empire, or one emperor governing everything. And Srila Prabhupada focuses right on that and emphasizes that point. And it's very, very far from where we are now in Kali Yuga in 2023, CE, AD, 2,000 years after Christ. Christ was 3,000 years after all of this was happening. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that there's no real proper history for more than 3,000 years ago, at least according to modern scientists and historians. So to understand this, to understand the context of Srimad Bhagavatam, to understand the culture of Bhagavatam, because there's so much detail in here, right, in Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look in other texts or other history books or books about the Romans or books about the Greeks, they're not going to go into all these details about these families that are living together and this one said this to that one and they reacted, and so much detail, so many details. So to plug the gap between now, 2023, and 5,000 years ago, then there is some information in Shastra that explains how we got to where we are now, and here, especially in the West, in England. One point that's mentioned that is quite important for this history is Parashuram. So Parashuram was an incarnation of Krishna, or an empowered incarnation of Krishna, Shaktivesh Avatar, right? So when Parashuram appeared, then the rulers of the world were very impious, and they were exploiting people, and they were, yeah, not doing a good job. So Parashuram's job was to cleanse the world of all of these impious rulers, these impious kings. And he did that very effectively. In fact, he didn't just kill one generation of Kshatriyas, which would be quite a lot as well, not just, you know, 5 or 10 or 10,000 or so we hear in the Bhagavad Gita. But he killed 21 generations of Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas are the rulers of the world, the kings. And it's said that when that was happening, then Kshatriyas were fleeing India. So they were leaving India and they were going to different countries around the world to run away from Parashuram. He was so powerful. I'll just mention one quick story about Parashuram so we understand something about the context of the Vedic culture 5,000 years ago. One time, Parashuram was at home and his father was there. His father was called Jamadagni, who was a Brahmana, right? His father was a Brahmana. So Jamadagni was at home and his mother went out to collect some water, as they did at that time. They would go to the river, bring some water. They didn't have affinity water. They didn't have taps. They collected water from the river or from a well or from a lake. So she went out to get some water, and when she was collecting water in the river, then she saw a demigod. I think it was an apsara. She saw an apsara or a gandhava. No, maybe a gandhava. I think the apsara is a lady. So she saw a gandhava at the river, and she was just attracted to him in her mind because they're very beautiful and godly. She collected the water and brought it home. And when she brought it home, then Jamadagni, he was such a powerful brahmana that he could just tell by seeing his wife that she had had these lusty thoughts within her mind. So he said to his son, son, kill your mother. I think there were three sons, and he said that to the eldest son, he said, kill your mother. And the first son said, you know, I can't do that. And he said to the other son, kill your mother. And he said, I can't do that. And he said, Parashuram, kill your mother. So Parashuram picked up his axe and beheaded his mother. So the first point is that Jamadagni could understand straight. Well, the first point is all she had done is just been temporarily attracted for a few seconds to this Gandhava. And in that age, then that is considered contamination. Second point is that Jamadagni could understand that immediately as soon as she came home. So you can understand the atmosphere there is so pure that as soon as there's a tiny taint of contamination, it means a lot. And the third point is that he told Parashuram to do it, and Parashuram had faith in his father. He knew the power of his father, and he knew how strict one has to be within religious principles also, so he did it. And his father was very happy. He said, good, thank you. Now ask for a benediction. Parashuram said, please bring my mother back to life and let us all forget about this so she doesn't know about what happened at all. And he said, yes, so be it. So that's one little story about Parashuram. And he killed 21 generations of Kshatriyas and solved the problem. But at that time, many Kshatriyas traveled to different places around the world, and they set up different communities, different nations. Srila Prabhupada says that the Europeans, the Kshatriyas, that we came from India originally, there's different groups, different tribes that are mentioned within the Bhagavatam. But he says that we are Kshatriyas, at least people who are living in Europe, at least most of them. Hungarians are mentioned, they're not Kshatriyas according to that. Huna is a different tribe. Just reading yesterday, Prabhupada says Hunas are in East Germany and some parts of Russia, but I'm assuming Hungary as well, because they traveled around. They came from different places. Actually, supposedly they were in Russia originally, the Hungarians, close to where my wife is from. So basically, where we are now, we are originally Kshatriyas that came from India. Had something to do with that Parashuram taking everybody, pushing everybody away. And there's also other histories. So there was one king called Yayati. I'll just read the tiny bit from Bhagavatam. This is the first canto. There's a story talking about Yayati in Srimad Bhagavatam, who was a great king. And he was also the emperor of the world. I'll just read a little bit here. This is the verse. Yayati had 5 sons, 2 from Devayani and 3 from Sharmishta. From his 5 sons, namely 1 Yadu, 2 Turvasu, 3 Druhyu, 4 Anu, and 5 Puru, 5 famous dynasties, namely 1 the Yadu dynasty, 2 the Yavana Turk dynasty, 3, the Bhoja dynasty. 4, the Malecha dynasty, Greek. And 5, the Pallava dynasty, all emanated to spread all over the world. So Yayati, he was an emperor, but he was a little bit lusty in the beginning. He was, Devayani wanted to marry him, but because she was a brahmana and he was a kshatriya, he didn't marry her. But then in the end, they did get married. But then she brought with her her maidservant, her friend Sharmishta. And one of the conditions of the marriage was that Yayati would not have anything to do with Sharmishta. He wouldn't have any children by Sharmishta. But that ended up happening. And Devayani was very unhappy. I believe she threw Sharmishta down a well. Vrindakishori was telling me that story one time at breakfast. She knew the whole story very well. But he eventually got cursed by Shukracharya, who was the father of Devayani. And he lost his youth. He lost his potency. He became impotent. So he asked his sons to give him that youth, to give him that youthful energy. And they wouldn't agree. Only one of them agreed. It was Puru, I believe. So Puru gave him that youth, and it took the youth from his son, Puru. So he had these 5 sons. And if you heard, then the first one was Yadu, who was the preceptor of the Yadu dynasty. So here, Vidura, Dhritarashtra, the Pandavas, they are all descendants of the Yadu dynasty. Second one was the Druhyu dynasty, I don't know. Second one was the Yavan, a Turk dynasty. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that different cultures that came from India were the Greeks, the Turks. So there was Athens, there was Istanbul, which used to be Constantinople, used to be a very important center of the world. And Prabhupada also mentions Rome as well, that Rome was an important, powerful city that was also connected to the Vedic culture. So here it's said that directly the Turks and the Greeks, they descended from the sons of Yayati. So that's described in the Vedas as well. We also see that if you look into history pre-Christianity, then there's a lot more connection to different cultures with the Vedic culture than after that. Jesus came, and there's a story about, I think it was about Abraham, that there was a person worshipping a deity, statue, idol, deity, we would probably say a deity, probably of one of the demigods. And Abraham came and he saw this person worshipping the statue, and he smashed the statue and said, "Why are you worshipping idols?" And the person argued that this is our culture. And he said, "Well, if this is your deity, if this is God, then they should be able to do something about it themselves. You know, I smashed the statue. Why doesn't the statue do something back to me?" And this was like the beginning of Abraham's quest. Yeah?
So it was Abraham's father that owned an idol shop, and Abraham went into the shop and he smashed all the smaller idols and he left the biggest idol. And his father came back into his shop and he was, "Son, what's happened? What's happened?" And his son said, "Oh, I saw the biggest idol, took the mallet and he smashed all the smaller idols." And his father struggled to believe it, but sort of had to because of his belief in idols. Yeah. Or at least that's what my dad told me.
Thank you, yeah. So Jesus came and he established that there's one God, which is a very important teaching, and that we know that in Hindu culture, often they get confused. How many deities are there? How many deities are there on my altar? All they're all one God, all they're all the same. And we have to understand, we're monotheistic, there's one God. So it was happening up until the time when Jesus came, that people were confused, worshipping many deities. So he came to establish that point. But often when you establish one point, then you're sweeping away everything else, right? How many libraries have been burned by crusaders, people who established Christianity around the world? How many things have been destroyed? How much knowledge has been lost? So a lot of that knowledge pre-Christ was much more connected to the Vedic culture, connected to astrology, connected to Ayurveda, connected to the cosmology of the Vedas, and you can see that clearly in other histories that go back. Just one, for instance, is the Scandinavian. If you go to Scandinavia, their ancient culture or their ancient books, they're called the Edda, so similar to the Veda. So this also talks about lots of different demigods, lots of different rites of passage, and it's called the Edda, whereas we have the Veda. So that is a little bit of a link between the Vedic culture and now. Also, there were other emperors. In the past, it was a common thing. People were powerful enough to be an emperor, powerful enough to rule the whole world. Although I'm assuming that there were different states. Just like in India, there were different kings, right? There were the Rajputs. They would take care of different areas. So I'm sure there was dependent rulers within that, but still it was united. But there were many emperors. We hear about Maharaj Parikshit, and then there was Janamejaya, who was kind of like the last emperor of the world. He's documented in many places in India. But then there were people like Priyavrata. I mean, I don't understand it so much, but they would rule like all these different dweeps as well, not even just this planet or what we see of this planet, but also other realms. So they're extremely powerful. And this was possible because people were living in accordance with Krishna's laws, and they were Krishna conscious. Prabhupada says here that the nations of the world are very eager to again have one state under one flag, but for this they must seek the favor of Lord Krishna, who alone can help us become one worldwide nation. It's a fact that if one follows the laws of Krishna and one abides by the laws of Krishna, one becomes powerful, and one can do things that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And why is that? Because Krishna empowers you, because Krishna is pleased with you, and Krishna uses you as an instrument. Just like in the Battle of Kurukshetra, so we hear about the Battle of Kurukshetra in the Bhagavad Gita, and there's a big fight going on, or we read the Mahabharata, it goes into it in more details, into the fight. Then there's a lot happening there, a lot of powerful warriors, and Arjuna is Krishna's right-hand man. He's assisting Krishna, and he's destroying lots of powerful warriors, as Krishna is helping him in various ways. When the Battle of Kurukshetra ended, when they were about to alight from the chariot, Arjuna was about to step down, and Krishna said, you step down. Arjuna said, Krishna, you go down. Krishna said, no, you go down first. So Arjuna stepped down from the chariot. And then when Krishna stepped down from the chariot, then the whole chariot fell to pieces, exploded, set on fire. And Arjuna was like, what happened there? Krishna said, if I hadn't been here with you, then it wouldn't quite have been the same story in the Battle of Kurukshetra. You may be powerful, but you're not that powerful. If I hadn't been there with you, if I hadn't been there assisting you, empowering you, protecting you, then you would not have been successful against all of those warriors. And it's shown later that Arjuna is defeated by a group of cowherd men after the Battle of Kurukshetra. He couldn't protect the queens of Dwarka from them, although during the Battle of Kurukshetra he had done so much. So if one is acting according to the will of Krishna, if one is acting in line with Krishna's desires, then there's no limit to what can be achieved if Krishna wants that to happen. Like we see Srila Prabhupada, 70 years old, comes to the West, in 10 years, opens so many restaurants, so many temples, writes so many books, initiate so many disciples. It's not humanly possible. How can one person do that in 10 years? And we're not talking about a business. We're talking about convincing meat eaters and woman hunters and gamblers in the West to change direction 180 degrees. Give up everything that they've been accustomed to, everything that they're addicted to, and change their life. It's just, unless one is empowered by Krishna, fully empowered by Krishna, it's not possible. Cannot happen. But if one is in line with Krishna, if one is in line with Krishna's desires, and Krishna wants something to happen, then amazing things can happen. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. So, these kings, these emperors would be extremely powerful, and we hear about Yudhishthira's rule, actually, that everything was perfect. Everything would work like clockwork. Everything was perfectly in tune with nature. It would only rain at night time. And we've heard this many times, devotees who've read Srila Prabhupada's books, it would only rain at night time. But can we actually understand what that means? It means there's no disturbances. Everything is working in harmony with Krishna's desires. Why? Because we're using this world to serve Krishna. We're using this world for what it's actually designed for. We're not taking a Lego set that's supposed to be a car and making like a giraffe out of it, or trying to make an airplane out of it, and we don't have the pieces, and you've got some pieces that are too long and some pieces are too short and you're missing wings, and it's like you're using it for the wrong thing. These days we're using this world for our sense gratification. We're taking all the resources that we can, basically, so we can make money. If you actually look at the world, Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction that if you look at the world, you see that actually nothing is done very sanely in this world. And the reason is people are just doing things for short-term gain to make money. And that may work in the short term. You may earn a lot of money. Although earning a lot of money in an impious way is not even enjoyable. You're earning that money and your conscience is telling you, this is not right, this is not a good thing to do. So you're actually not happy. You're feeling the accumulation of that bad karma. If you do things in a pious way, then you feel happy and you feel enlightened, right? You go on book distribution. If you like book distribution, if it goes well, then how good do you feel? You go on Harinam, how good do you feel? You feel so elated, so happy. You haven't earned any money. You haven't done anything materially. Spiritually, you feel so good. So if we act according to the laws of nature, then everything works perfectly. It's said even in, there's four different ages, Satyuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Kali Yuga. So they're different lengths. Kali Yuga is 400,000 years long. And then Treta Yuga is twice as long as that, right? And then, And Dwapara Yuga is three times as long as Satyuga is four times as long. Yeah, 1,200,000 years long. So it said that this Kali Yuga is the most degraded age. It's the worst age. We're just at the beginning of it now. And as you go back, then they come progressively better and progressively purer. It's described that in Satya Yuga, where people would live for 100,000 years, then everything was so nice, everything was so Krishna conscious, everything was so pure, that to grow food, you didn't have to do anything. There was no need for agriculture. There was no need for sowing seeds and weeding and fertilizer and all of these things, digging out the potatoes. It just all came out naturally. Everyone was so in tune with Krishna, you didn't have to go out and work hard because you were already being Krishna conscious. You were doing what Krishna wanted you to do, so he provided what you needed. I said in Maharaj Yudhishthira's reign, that's just 5,000 years ago, well, to speak of Satya Yuga, which was a couple of million years ago, then even in Maharaj Yudhishthira's reign, then the cows were so happy because they were looked after and protected. They were producing such a profuse supply of milk that was just going all over the fields. And the mountains would produce so many, I think it was minerals, the oceans, there were so many jewels coming out from the oceans, well, everything that you needed. So if we act according to Krishna's desire, if we please Krishna by our actions, then everything that we need is supplied. Ananyas chintayantamam yejana payupasate tesha nityabhyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. If we focus on Krishna, then Krishna will carry what we lack and preserve what we have, and we'll have everything that we need. Another example, just a little story to illustrate this point, is when Krishna and Arjuna were on the planet. They were in Dwarka, and a Brahmana came to them. So Brahmanas are like the saintly class in society. In the Vedic society, we have the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. They are like the teachers, the saintly class, rulers, kings, police, army people. Vaishyas are the like business-minded people, and Shudras are laborers who assist others in what they're doing. So he was a Brahmana who came to Krishna and Arjuna. And what was happening was that every time he had a child, it would die. And this had happened a few times. So he came to Krishna and Arjuna and he complained. Can you imagine that right now? You know, like I go to work and I get sacked unfairly. So I walk to Westminster, I go and knock on the door, 10 Downing Street, I want to speak to Rishi Sunak. You know, I got sacked unfairly, it's your fault. You know, you sort this out, you're doing something wrong. Can you imagine? It's just like so bizarre for us. But in the Vedic culture, it was so, the rule of the kings was so pure and so powerful that it was so linked to the individual lives of people that the king was directly culpable for anything that would happen in these people's lives. Absolutely amazing. It's very difficult for us to conceive of at this time. So Arjuna took this on himself and he was finding out why are these children dying. It was actually Mahavishnu, Krishna, who was taking those children. But the point is that the king was so responsible. It said that even in this previous ages, people would not feel any mental disturbance because everything was so in line with Krishna's rule. In this age, people are feeling more and more mental disturbance. Although people may follow the states, the laws of the state, it's misleading. You follow the law of the state, and the law of the state contravenes Krishna's laws. Like we go out, say, in the past, when devotees would go out and distributing books in the 60s, 70s, 80s, they would go and distribute books and they would be arrested on the street, right? So that's an example of where the law of the state directly contravenes Krishna's law. We should be teaching people about Krishna, and the law, the state arrests you for doing such a thing. What to speak of Muslim countries or other countries where we can't preach Krishna consciousness? Russia, there's so many restrictions on preaching Krishna consciousness there, and in other countries also. So even if one follows the laws of the state, still that is not in line with Krishna's laws. So those sinful reactions come to the state. And it's not easy. It's not easy to practice Krishna consciousness within an atheistic society. We're lucky here in England because it's so laissez-faire, so libertarian, that you can do whatever you want. But still, in the Vedic culture, the brahmanas would just be looked after, right? We see with devotees, they live in the temple, then they move out, then how do they survive? In the Vedic culture, brahmanas didn't have to worry about their occupation. They studied the Vedas, they taught the Vedas, they worshipped the deities. They taught others how to worship the deities. They would receive donations and give donations. They didn't have to worry about their maintenance. They didn't have to go and get a job. So that should be happening. Devotees should be supported because they're practicing Krishna consciousness, but that doesn't happen. So those are a couple of points about the context that we have and living in harmony with Krishna's laws and how these kingdoms, these dynasties would work when the ruler was Krishna conscious. The last point I wanted to bring up before we finish was about Vidura. So as I mentioned, in this chapter we're hearing all about Vidura, the history of Vidura, because in the beginning Shukadeva Goswami is asking, how is it that Vidura came to speak to Maitreya Rishi? Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukadeva Goswami. So Shukadeva Goswami is explaining what is the history of Vidura. And recently, His Holiness Radhanath Swami gave class when it was the 50th anniversary, and he spoke about Vidura very, very beautiful. That if we just put ourselves in Vidura's shoes for a minute, then Vidura, we know he is an incarnation of Yamaraj, then Vidura was living within the house of the Kauravas, the brother of Dhritarashtra. And he would always advise Dhritarashtra, always say the right thing, always guide him to be Krishna conscious. And Dhritarashtra would always do the wrong thing. He would always do the wrong thing looking after Duryodhana, his son, who is extremely sinful. Many times we hear these stories from the Bhagavatam. If you've been here a few years, you've heard the stories. Oh yeah, that story again, this story again, Arjuna and Krishna. Vidura or Prahlad, yeah, we've heard this story so many times. But Radhanath Swami was making a really nice point that let's put ourselves in their shoes. If we understand actually what situation are they in, what does it actually mean? Vidura was there. Duryodhana kicked him out of the household. Varnaswami was saying, kicked him out of the household means he also had family there. Duryodhan kicked him out with nothing but his breath. So Vidura could take nothing with him, nothing at all. Can you imagine somebody just comes to your household? Okay, you're out. No money that you've been working for so long, no family, one set of clothes. And it's said also that Vidura, I don't know if we'll find the exact word, but he was aggrieved to his heart, to the core of his heart when that happened. Duryodhan kicked him out. And we should understand, just to make this point briefly, that it's the same through all of the shastras. We hear about different personalities. A classic one is Draupadi, the wife of the Pandavas. So what happened to her sons? They were all killed, right? They were all beheaded at night time. And what happened to Devaki? What happened to her sons? They were all killed, right? Seven sons, they were all killed. Mother Omala was elaborating upon this. Sometimes we think, I have my situation, you know, I've got my little house, or I've got my little bed in the Brahmacharya ashram, or I've got my flat or whatever it is, and I've got so many problems, I've got so many issues. People don't know about my issues, you know, it's like, I've got special issues, I've got special problems, I can't tell anybody about it. It's this situation, this weird situation with my wife or with my parents or with this thing or with my health or my mental health or whatever it may be. It's like such a tricky situation, I mean, complicated and very difficult to deal with. But you're not the only one. You're not the only one. That we hear different situations with Vidura. Can we imagine if that would happen to us? You're kicked out. You got to go now, immediately. And Vidura, he just went and he took shelter of Krishna. He went on pilgrimage. He met Uddhava. He heard from Uddhava. Then he talks to Maitreya. So we should understand that the struggles that we go through, difficulties that we go through in life, it's okay. Krishna is there. Krishna will help you. Krishna can do anything, as he has helped all of these devotees. Prahlad Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, also the inhabitants of Vrindavan, when Krishna goes somewhere, which he does all the time, like even in Goloka Vrindavan, when he just goes to the pastures and comes back, the pain that the inhabitants of Vrindavan feel is inconceivable. We don't feel that kind of pain with anything. Even Krishna, right? Krishna is Sarvagya, he knows everything, but he's also Mugdata, he's also covered. So when he is performing his pastimes, like with Mother Yashoda, he's afraid of Mother Yashoda. He's like, he's very afraid, he's shaking, he's crying. So we all have these situations where we're crying in this material world. Durga means one who makes people cry. So we all cry in this material world due to different problems, but Krishna's right there. Just as he's with all of his devotees, with Vidura, he's with Prahlad Maharaj, Yogakshemam Vahamiham, Krishna will come to our rescue and Krishna will save us if, as we were mentioning, we stick by our Krishna conscious principles. Maharaj Yudhishthira never compromised his principles. These kings, they're so powerful because they followed those principles. Just like Ashwatthama, right? Ashwatthama, he killed the sons of Draupadi. But in the future, because he's repenting for that and because he's practicing Krishna consciousness, he's in Vrindavan, in Kokilavan, hearing about Krishna, repenting. In the future, he will become Vyasadeva. So if one follows the principles, then you gather spiritual strength and you can be empowered by Krishna. To the degree that we deviate from those things, to that degree we become weak. And although you can prosper for some time, like somehow or another this Western society is hanging on at the moment, propped up in various ways, but to the degree that they're not following Krishna's instructions, to that degree they will suffer. Prabhupada said about England that because they exploited India so much, he said, in the future they'll become beggars. It's just a question of time. Okay, thank you for your attention. Grantva Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Does anybody have any quick questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. So from what I understand, a long time ago, there was only the Vedic culture. There was no other religions. And so I'm just wondering, like, how the other religions appeared, and like, how should we see them? Like, is it bona fide? And like, what's the goal for us? Is the idea to make everyone devotees of Krishna? Or, you know, for me, there's always like this question, like how to see other spiritual traditions, basically. You know?
Yeah, it's a good question. In the Vedic culture, then, it was all direct within Varnashram. Although it's difficult to know exactly all the details, but we hear Maharaj Yudhishthira was the king of the world. I mean, it's difficult to know all the details. Different religions that we're aware of, they come because people have deviated, people are going off in the wrong direction. So some prophet comes to bring them back according to what they're ready for. And I've heard, Suhotra Swami wrote about this, that the beginning with Zoroastrianism. So Zoroastrianism brought in this concept of good and evil and of the devil. They would talk about duality there. So I've heard that Christianity took that from there, this conception of the devil, that there's God and he's fighting with the devil. It's like, so different religions are there to help people come closer to God according to where they're at. But it might not be the highest religious system. Like Srila Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Bible and the Quran are scriptures of the Mlechas and the Yavanas. So they are scriptures, but they're not very high scriptures. They're not very high class. They're good for something. But Srila Prabhupada would also say, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. It's not exactly, you know, Rasalila or Raghunuga Bhakti. It's like, you know, don't kill anybody, please. You know, just hold back. You know, don't run off with your neighbor's wife. Just leave her alone. That's not even, Prabhupada said, it's not even religion. It's just like basic stopping animalistic activities. These people aren't ready to hear about Krishna Lila. They just got to be kept from not performing sinful activities. And when they become purified, like Jesus also said, so there's so much I could tell you, but you're not ready to hear. So if somebody's practicing a religion, they're actually practicing it, that's good. They'll become purified, and later they'll become ready to practice Krishna consciousness, but they may not be ready at the moment, but it would be more beneficial, just like we hear, like the benefit you get from chanting Krishna, you have to chant Ram 3 times to get that benefit. The benefit you get from that, you have to chant Vishnu 1,000 times to get that. I mean, it's actually not the same chanting Krishna and Ram, but it's as a comparison. So better that they chant Krishna's names, but they may not be ready for that. So many people aren't ready for it, right? But they can understand something. So you have to gauge it with that person. What are they ready for? And we should respect it. One time I asked my spiritual master, I was in Istanbul airport with him. We were preaching in Turkey. And there were many, many Muslims in the airport and in their religious attire. And I asked him, what benefit do they get for their religious practices? Because they're also performing various sinful activities we would consider. And he said, the benefit that they get for their worship is eternal. Neha bikramana shosti. The benefit they get from worshipping the Lord is eternal. Then they'll get the reactions for their sinful activities. But if they're praying to God, they're worshipping God, they're sacrificing things for Him, they'll get the benefit for that. It's only one path. There's only one God. Is that okay? Little comment on that. Anything else? No? Okay, thank you very much. Who? He's okay. He's satisfied. He's good. He's hungry.
Can you potentially be practicing Krishna consciousness, but without being aware that you're doing so? So without all the sort of terminology and language, or is that not possible?
In what sense? How would you be practicing Krishna consciousness?
So say you meditate, but just silently you go in yourself and you empty, not in the mind at all. You go beyond the body to a deeper sense of consciousness. Can you arrive at a Krishna consciousness without any awareness?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you call it practicing Krishna consciousness, but if one is sincere and wants to know the truth, if one wants to come closer to the truth and understand, you know, is there a God? Or, you know, who am I? Why am I here? What is the reality around me? Then you're on the path. Like many of us, I'm sure, before we came to Krishna consciousness, we were doing something, trying to go in that direction, and it led us to Krishna consciousness. So it may be like, if you have a plant, you have a seed, and then the seed sprouts, and then it grows a little bit, it's developing, and then when it becomes a plant, then it's like you're coming to Krishna consciousness. So yeah, we often need things to take us to that. There's many different levels, so there's different ways of worshipping Krishna directly and indirectly. Some people are attracted to the impersonal aspect of Krishna, the oneness of everything. But the Bhagavatam explains that Krishna is the origin of that oneness, that's his effulgence, that's his light, it's coming from a person. But yeah, as long as if we're sincerely searching for the truth, then when that truth comes to us, then we should also accept it and we should practice it. Some people are just into the journey, they're not into the destination. But we've got a destination to go to and our time is limited. So if we come across real knowledge, then we should accept that and we should practice that. And if we're not sure if it's true or not, then try and defeat it. Then when I came to Krishna consciousness, I was like, well, this all sounds very interesting. Let's see if it has any flaws. And I couldn't find any. I can't find any still. So we have to become open to be defeated by Krishna consciousness at some point. If it's actually really what it says it is, then we should accept it and we should practice it. And we're very fortunate that we've come to this point that we're coming in contact with it. It means that we are open and honest and sincere and fortunate. Just delve into it, learn more, experiment with it. Okay, thank you. Yes, Prayojan Prabhu.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it has chapter 17. It's called Divisions of Faith. And it explains in many ways that not only there are divisions of faith, that and Prabhupada understood this basic knowledge that certain people, they've come to become a Muslim or Christian or whatever, and they have a goal. And but also, there's the modes of material nature, which people practice their religion, like fanatics. They'll kill millions or thousands of people for the sake of religion. And it's what we call practicing religion in the complete mode of ignorance. And we got modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And so we should understand that, you know, it's in this chapter 17, it goes into that, the various ways we can practice. We can become a fanatic Hare Krishna. And there were. But they took it too far. People even ended up in prison because they killed others because they thought they were okay, or they weren't okay, you know, or it was some sort of a political thing. So we should understand the way we practice, whether it be in goodness, passion, or ignorance, is another variation. And divisions of faith, that chapter 17 is has many of the answers. So if you get the Bhagavad Gita, it's like the essence. You'll learn the basic knowledge that there are divisions of faith, but the way they practice their faith is all divided into goodness, passion, and ignorance. As I say, they commit suicide. God does not love martyrs, it says. You know, because they're destroying not only themselves for the sake of their religion, they're destroying others to take them with them. Just they're fanatic. No, we have to respect our own body in many ways. And so we've got to practice in such a way where we're either in goodness, passion, or ignorance. Whatever path we come, there are those people that have modes of passion and ignorance. You know, so it's just a wonderful thing. When you study Bhagavad Gita, it will give you the essence of, and Prabhupada will explain why it's so. So Bhagavad Gita is amazing book, which brought me to this place, actually.
Jai.
Yeah. Anyway, okay.
Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.